Now, more compelling talk radio, 1320 WILS, is live in Lansing with the Michigan Association of Broadcasters Excellence Award winner for Best Personality. This is the Capital City Recap with Michael Cohen.
Good evening. It is Friday. Beautiful 70 and sunny. I'm Michael Cohen, producer Solomon Martin. Thanks for joining us tonight. We'll hear from former New York City Police Commissioner Bernard Carrick. He was there during 9/11. Then he ended up going to prison after he was targeted by a federal investigation. We'll get his thoughts on what's happening down there in Baltimore and his experience in prison. But first, we were going to talk to him yesterday, but he's here tonight. Eric Hipple, former Detroit Lions quarterback, spent most of the 80s as a Lion. And he spoke actually yesterday at the Michigan Suicide Prevention Conference here in Lansing, talking about his own very painful experience with suicide. Eric, great to have you here.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, this, you speak a lot about your experience with suicide, and specifically the suicide of your 15-year-old son. Now, when, at what point in your life did that happen? Was that then after football? Or?
Yeah, that was actually, it was in the year 2000, and he was 15 years old, and it really opened my eyes and obviously devastated me as well. Mm-hmm. But in the aftermath, educating myself and learning about the depressive illness, and it really opened my eyes to some of the plight that, you know, even my former players have, which is 15%. One study showed 15% of the former players suffer from depression, moderate to severe depression. Mm-hmm. And then we had that rash of suicides that came around, you know, after the announcement that, you know, the link between concussions and long-term effects, so, 30% of the players might be affected by it.
So you suffered from depression yourself, right?
I did. Yeah, I went through it, and some of it was transitional, but some of it was, I guess, biological, you know, and some of it was brought on by trauma.
Do you believe some of that was the just playing football and the injuries you took?
You know, it's really hard for me to break those two out, because it would be really easy for me to say, you know, yes, it was because of the concussions and head injury, because it can lead to depression. It can lead to long-term effects. But in the same token, I had a 15-year-old son who never had his head hit, who was an athlete himself, mm-hmm. and yet had every exact symptom that I had, and yet with no head injury. And so I know that's real. It's hard for me to say which is which, and I think it's a mix of the both.
Oh, did your son ever tell you that he was having hard feelings or having a hard time?
No, that's the problem, because he didn't have the language to say. All he could tell me was he didn't feel good. Mm-hmm. And yet, you know, his behavior started changing. And I had gone through that myself, and I didn't have the language to know what it was, or mm-hmm. the knowledge to know what was happening to me. So I just kind of, you know, suck it up and, you know, push through it. Mm-hmm. And because neither one of us had the right language to talk to each other about, you know, unfortunately, it got to a point where, you know, death became an answer for him.
So
sure that people have the language. I'm sorry?
Had you already been experiencing depression then as your son was getting to that age?
Yes. In fact, like I said, I believe I went through it some in college, my junior year. Mm-hmm. Some of it was after an injury, but some of it was, you know, I guess it would attribute to that. The other portion is about 6 years after I left the game, mm-hmm. I kind of flattened out and went to this major depression as well.
Were you suicidal yourself?
Well, it culminated in an attempt. I jumped out of a car that was going 70 miles an hour, and you know, my wife was driving the car, and I wrote a little note real quick and just told her I was sorry and that I loved her.
Amazing.
But then jumped out of the car.
So you wrote the note while you were in the car?
She was driving the car, and I was a passenger in the car.
Now,
we were headed for the airport.
Take me through that, because many times people don't understand how this can happen. At what point did you getting in the car, did you know this was about to happen?
Well, this is accumulating over a period of time. I had a business, and I just didn't feel right, and also, you know, over time, the business started to fail. And but I just still wasn't with it. Mm-hmm. And so this was an attempt to fly down to Arizona to get, you know, a new product and new business venture, whatever it was. And yes, on the way down, I just didn't feel right. I just felt like overwhelmed, and I just don't want to do this.
Okay.
And so I previously I had thoughts in my head sometimes about maybe it should be better if I wasn't around. Mm-hmm. I feel like a burden to everybody. Maybe my wife would be better off without me. and you just get through those, you know, those really negative thoughts that the people we've heard off about.
Yeah, tell me this, Eric. What about the other feeling of, you know, the emotional impact that would have on your wife when you're sitting there? Does that cross your mind too? If I were to die this way, what would happen then?
That doesn't go through your head. What goes through your head is that, you know, everybody, they're off. And so this is, and maybe I will be too, being dead, you know? And so that's what goes through your head.
You feel that everyone would be better off without you. And in what way would they be better off? How does that thought go through you?
Well, you go through some crazy thought processes. One is, you know what, I've got a big life insurance, so financially they'll be better off. You go through I'm not being a very good, you know, husband right now because I'm not there with it. I'm not keeping up my end of the bargain. And it's stressful, so maybe they'll be better off, you know, emotionally without me. You just feel like you're in the way, and that, you know, if you just move yourself out of the way, everybody else will move on fine without you. You don't even think about the consequences of how they would actually feel in missing you.
Feel
like you wouldn't be missed at all.
What keeps you from saying that to your loved ones before the attempt?
Mostly is that you don't want to bother them. If you feel like a burden already, you certainly don't want to burden somebody else with, okay, here's more problems to bring to you. You know, here's one more thing you've got to deal with that I'm causing. And so, you know what, I've got my own solution. You know what, if you're going to be better off, I'll just take that solution. But oftentimes, it's really hard for a person to see it in somebody else because they're putting on a good mask, they're putting on a good face. And I carried that. I did that as much as I possibly could.
Now,
not knowing that down deep inside.
I'm talking to Eric Hibble, former Detroit Lions quarterback, spoke this week at the Michigan Suicide Prevention Conference. He's actually an outreach coordinator for the Depression Center of the University of Michigan. When you talk about going day-to-day, how do you conceal something so dark that's inside you? How do you actually go day-to-day and have it so people can't see that?
And that's interesting. Well, and I want to point out also that the last year and a half, I work with the Eisenhower Center after the Impact Program, where we're actually putting former players together with veterans who are going through the same issues and behavioral issues that I'm describing right now. And so I feel very thankful to be able to do that. But and part of that, discovering that dark, moment? How do you feel that?
How do you conceal it? How is it that people are not detecting that you are feeling?
It actually takes a lot of energy. And so you can't do it throughout the whole day. You can't do it throughout, you know, and so it comes in spurts. Like, you know, you feel like crap. You'd be sitting down, maybe with your head down or something, but you hear somebody walk in the room and you brighten up for them, you know. Hey, what's going on? But you don't spend a lot of time with them because you know you can't maintain it. And so then you might disappear again. So when you see people that kind of, they look like they're sociable for a short period of time, but they disappear again, you know, and they've got some other things that are going on, maybe sleep issues, maybe some pain issues, maybe, just not being as active as they were in the past, and maybe they have some favorite hobbies or things they liked doing, but they're not doing them anymore.
So you're saying,
trying to put on a happy face.
In your case, your wife, I mean, once this happened, she's driving, you open the door and get out. Now, were you injured in that situation?
Yeah, I was hospitalized. Yeah, I woke up in the hospital after about a day and a half.
What did your wife say to you at that point?
She didn't know what to say. I woke up and I had a psychiatrist sitting next to me talking. My parents had flown in from California. They were there and they're having this little powwow. I can very clearly remember them having this discussion about what they're going to do with me. And I remember very clearly telling them they're not going to do anything with me. I don't have a mental health problem. So, ironically as that sounds, I got bandages all over my body and some skin grafts they had to do. I'm telling them that I'm fine. So
what happens then? At what point did you seek help?
I really didn't seek, you know, I dabbled in help afterwards because just to placate, you know, some people, but I really didn't believe I still had, you know, an issue because, you know, hey, I'll shake this off. You know, this can't be me. Look, and I was a star player. This can't be how my life is going. And so I kind of fought it off. I really didn't seek help until after my son died.
Now, how old was your son when you attempted suicide?
Let's see. He would have been 12. 12.
Oh, so it was just 3 years later then. Now, was he aware of the circumstance of you doing that? Or?
No, because he was going back and forth between my ex-wife and I. So he was living in Utah and coming back here. And in fact, we kept the attempt pretty well hidden as an attempt. Nobody knew I actually jumped. The story we put out was that I actually fell out of the car. I'm looking for something. and I opened the door to look for something. So
now, anyway. With your son's death, do you spend time looking at the moments before, the days before, trying to analyze that, or how do you deal with that?
Certainly. In fact, I think you can call it what the science calls a psychological autopsy, where you try and go back and look at all the things that were factors, mm-hmm. all the things that, and then you look at all the symptoms that were actually present that you might have missed and skipped over because you didn't know exactly what to look for or didn't know that it's part of something that's larger. Mm-hmm. And so we're able to piece together that he was probably going through a depression the spring before when he was out in Utah, came out and lived with me, just doing great at the beginning of the year, started going downhill again. And I believe he was having his own transitional issues. He's going through his teenage years, mm-hmm. going back and forth between his mom and myself is transitional. You know, we don't think about that impact it has on kids, you know, going through divorce. And my ex-wife and I were friends, you know, and yet this, you know, he started falling into this transition stuff and just got lost, you know, his identity and who he is and then shifting.
One last thing, Eric, tell me, how do you live beyond something like this? How do you continue your life after going through a tragedy like losing your son this way?
It's not easy. It takes a large support system around you to help you grieve properly. This is a type of death that's really hard to grieve from because it's really misunderstood or not understood at all. Mm-hmm. And so some people just don't know what to say. But I didn't do a very good job of it at all the first year. In fact, I did about everything the opposite of what you should be doing. I just tried to stay numb. I was using alcohol, Xanax, you know, prescription medication. I was using Vicodin. Mm-hmm. About any things I could get my hands on that would help me be numb. You know, and just so I wouldn't have to think, I felt really guilt. And a lot of guilt was involved in this.
Guilt for not detecting it? Is that what it is? Or not being
not
able
detecting
to...
it correctly. For having gone through it myself, mm-hmm. and yet not knowing exactly and not seeking help myself. And then having it happen to him. And then just not being able to be there to help him.
I have to ask you, in the state of mind when you're suicidal, in your case too, if someone had approached you within moments or days before that and said, look, I can tell something is very wrong, would you have opened up and told them?
Depending on the circumstances, and if somebody if somebody knew the questions to ask, mm-hmm. Yes, I think I would have been an easy book to read.
Would that have stopped you from trying?
Oh, I believe so. I believe it would have got me to talk to somebody and believe in the process. But I really didn't have that, you know, and it's nobody's fault around because you just don't expect that, especially, you know, I was hiding things pretty well, mm-hmm. And yet inside suffering for quite a while. But that's the trick in most suicide prevention models. Mm-hmm. There's a big piece of it that says you have to ask a person how they're doing. And that means you have to have a little bit of knowledge of what to look for and what to pick up on, but not to be afraid to ask. And usually right. that means you need to know what your resources are, what the, you know, the suicide hotline might be. Right. You know, do I call 911? Do I, you know, where's the nearest hospital if I got to take to my hospital? You know, if you have those resources, you're not afraid to ask somebody. So tell me what's really happening. Right. And pierce them through and look them eye to eye and be frank with them. Because that's what really opens up, because then you feel that somebody actually understands how you're feeling. Right, well, you don't even understand it yourself.
And they know you're listening, too. Eric Hipple, former Detroit Lions quarterback. He's now an outreach coordinator for the Depression Center at the University of Michigan. Spoke this week at the Michigan Suicide Prevention Conference. Eric, thank you very much.
Hey, thank you very much for discussing this topic on the radio. I really appreciate it.
Yep.
Thank you.
Thank you.